This is the partially edited conversation between myself, Mikey Kettinger, and artist Zach Landsberg, who is the founder of Zachistan. Please be advised that this conversation does include some instances of explicit language.
Are you familiar with this space Quack?
I've heard of it. Yes, I've heard of it.
Yeah. So I'm going to do a show there next September, and kind of like, to get the buzz going on that, there's going to be a kind of like panel discussion about Zachistan. Mike, who's going to kind of present, because he went out there this year and then wrote the Vice article. So he's going to sort of talk about that. And I think we might get like a U of U or a BYU professor and then some other kind of felt like intellectual sort of riff about Zachistan.
That's great.
And that's going to be at Quack on December 3rd, I believe.
Of this year, or is that going to be of next year?
No, yeah, that's this year. So, like, next month, early next month.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, well, I could mention that, too.
Yeah, totally. There is a chance I might be there for that event. I mean, things have been kind of crazy of late. So, like, there's a Japanese game show that wants to interview me in Zachistan. I don't know if that's going to work out or how serious that'll be, but that might be around that time. where is Utah State?
It's about a little less than 2 hours north of a drive from Salt Lake City.
Okay, so 2 hours north, got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where is Zachistan? And how do you get there?
It's more near the Nevada border, so it's, I guess, it's off Highway 30. It would be like, I guess, kind of right across the lake from Salt Lake. I mean, the nearest towns are, I guess, I don't know, are you familiar with like Snowville?
No, but Highway 30 does go to Logan.
Highway 30?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
That's where I take that to go to the Spiral Jetty.
You went up kind of 15 and then on 84 and then it breaks off right before the Idaho border. And then kind of goes, plants down, and then ends up in Nevada. So it's about kind of halfway over there. So it's like, I guess, 25 miles over the Nevada border, or east of the Nevada border, and then a little south. So it's kind of where the mudflats turn into the, or, yeah, where the sort of hills turn into mudflats, and then after that they turn into salt flats.
I see. Excellent. Yeah, well, that's cool. I mean, is there some kind of directions on the website or anything? I just found out about last night, so I've only done a limited amount of research.
Sure.
But I would love to go there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely organizing some trips for, you know, I think the next summer and maybe possibly this spring. I mean, I'm keeping, yeah, I mean, it's unclear about how the publicity thing will roll and how many times I end up, but I keep the coordinates like a little kind of like a little secret just so like people don't flock out there. But if you really wanted to take the trip, we can coordinate something, I think.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
I mean, I know it's like mad cold right now and it's kind of a, you know, it is like a lot of dirt roads and then a walk through the desert and stuff. So.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So maybe
it's not
a spring.
It's more than, I think, like a short day trip, I'd say.
Yeah, that's cool. Do you know where it is in relation to the Spiral Jetty? Or is that something that was important to you with all the other land art that's in Utah, with putting it where you did?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think I'm into that piece, and I think it's one of I think it's my favorite art piece ever. I mean, no, the Salt Lake is just a weird place, you know. It is a weird, bizarre spot. And so, I mean, that, and it's also like kind of wasteland, too. So that's where land was cheap. But I think it's no accident that, like, land artists and Mormons and, you know, military dudes and kind of desert weirdos have all been drawn to the kind of weird alien landscape out there.
I think you're right. That's really cool. Yeah, that's great, man. So I was reading the Vice article, and you alluded to something about thinking about some of the motivation for creating this new country was in response to how crazy things were with the Bush administration and Hurricane Katrina and whatnot. Was there any particular event that was kind of the last straw or that comes to mind when you think about what was frustrating you that made you want to create your own country in the middle of nowhere?
Well, I mean, Katrina, I think literally that happened. Like, I went out to the desert to see it, and then when we got back, like, that had just happened. So we were listening to it on the radio, being like, what the fuck? So I think that was kind of the last straw. I mean, that was sort of the motivation, although, you know, it's kind of changed, you know, once Obama got elected and, you know, I got a little older, you know, it doesn't really work as like a reactionary Bush thing if Bush isn't in charge anymore, you know? So, I mean, I've kind of deliberately kept it like not quite apolitical, but I don't make policy stands or I don't say what Congress should do with this bill or that bill, you know? And in that sense, like people kind of project onto it. So I feel like I get a lot of emails from like kind of extreme libertarian dudes who are really into it, and then some like lefty hippies who are also like, yeah, no borders, man, all right. So like I guess I appeal to like extreme right and extreme left at the same time.
How does that make you feel?
I mean, it's a little heartening. I wish, you know, like I think like weirdos are the ones who really like want to let me know what's up. But I try and think of myself as like not like a crazy, you know, crazy out there weirdo or libertarian survivalist. I mean, you know, I'm just a guy, you know, asking some questions. So.
Yeah, I like it. Well, that's funny. I mean, when you say that, it totally makes sense to me. But the thing that interested me about it was just the art part of it, and I think it's a creative work of art, and I could see why a lot of other people connect to it for the political interpretation of it, definitely. But I think it's just a really
Yeah.
creative, you know, like a kind of a. How would you characterize it in terms of what kind of art it is?
I mean, that's the thing is it's a lot of different pieces at once, you know. So like the monuments are like I guess, you know, art, but that's not what it is, you know. It's when the arty part I think happens when it comes up against the real thing, you know, and then the interaction happens. So I mean, it's like a 45-minute story, but I had some blank Dagestan passports confiscated at LAX when I was coming back into the country, and it was like this long, this prolonged, like intense thing to get them back. But yeah, you know, it was like me convincing the Department of Homeland Security dudes and us having this debate about like what is allowed, you know, like what is the law, what is not. What are the, you know, like, what are these, you know? Are they passports? Are they counterfeit, you know? Because they're not counterfeit. They're genuine Uzbekistan passports. And yeah, like, it freaked them the fuck out because, like, it just looked official. Or it looked official, you know? It looked official like that. There's a lot of power in just, like, letterhead and, you know, the surface of things.
Yeah, so did you approach making the passports and making the, you know, that gate where you have the border kind of thing when people arrive, like it's detailed in the Vice article and there's a nice picture. Is that something that you approached as an art project or am I just kind of, since I'm interested in art thinking, am I kind of just reading that into it?
No, I mean, I'm an artist, like that's my trade, you know. And so like, but I, you know, I don't, but you know, the official line is, and it is kind of true, like, well, it is, you could make a case that it's a de facto sovereign nation, like that's kind of stretching the English language, but it's not a lie, it's not made up, you know. It is like a national identity. There are Uzbekistanis across the world that, you know, identify as Uzbekistan. You could put together an art show, which I'm working on for the show at Quack later in the year. That you know, if you put a bunch of Dagestani artists together, I think there would be some linkages in their work, even if you know even if the work isn't about Dagestan, I think there's a similar mindset. I mean, and it's a decrepit sculpture garden. It's some, like, trash in the middle of the desert, and it's, you know, an art project. It's like all of these things at once, you know. It's not easily definable, which is kind of where I like it to be.
So what other type of art do you do? Or do you describe yourself in a certain way?
Yeah.
Or are you like a social engagement
big,
artist?
Yeah, I do big kind of monumental sculpture is my thing. Or, you know, large-scale sculpture. So, I mean, kind of big part of my work is, you know, things that look like other things. I'm interested in surface. I'm interested in, you know, things that sort of elicit kind of a visceral gut reaction. So, yeah, you can check out my site. It's Zach Art, ZAQART, and it has some of my past work. But
I'll definitely check that out. So is that what the show will be at Quack? It will be your work, or is it going to be other people that are involved with the Zakistan project also?
I mean, I haven't totally confirmed, like, what exactly it's going to be, but we've been tinkering with this idea of a Zakistan biennial to, like, kind of, like, try and put together a group show, because, you know, like, I don't want it to just be me, you know, and, like, look at my stuff, because I like to think it's become, like, bigger than just me at this point, you know? So yeah, I'm, like, interested in trying to get... There's some Zakistanis in Argentina. There's some Zakistanis in Europe. And then there's a couple of Tibetan exiles who are Zakistani citizens. So I think it'd be kind of this interesting poetic move to bring everybody together in the desert to, like, kind of talk about what the deal is.
Well, yeah, I think that's a great idea. How does one become a Zakistani citizen?
I mean, basically, you just got to want it. That's sort of the main qualification. But you can apply for a passport on my site, and then, you know, if you don't want to pay the application fee or you don't want that physical passport, I just give out citizenship for free as long as people fill out the form in full. So, you know, it's like you fill out the form and give me your address, and I'll send you, like, a piece of letterhead with a stamp on it, making you, like, official, naturalized Zakistani citizen.
That's great. I'm going to do that. Yeah, I'm going to do that. That's really cool. So how is there, seems like there'd be a lot of cost involved with all this elaborate stuff. How are you able to, do you raise money for all these different things, or how does that work?
I mean, I fund most of it. And I mean, it's, you know, been some money spread out over like 10 years. So, but I'm trying to figure out ways to monetize it. Although, like, you know, so I charge a passport fee, and I mean, it does take my time and stuff to make that stuff. But, I mean, yeah, it's tough. I don't really have a great solution, because it's like, I can't just sell passports, you know, like, to become a citizen, you have to accept that, or, you know, you have to, like, want to enter into that and explain why, you know, like, you can't just buy it, right? So there's that aspect of, like, a literal, like, well, if I'm going to, you know, create this facsimile or this real thing of citizenship, then there's got to be this exchange of filling out a form, a little bit of effort, and that's hard to just, like, one click buy it, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I make money off of passports a little bit. But a lot of it's just, like, kind of run and gun shit, or, like, beg, borrow, and steal whatever I can.
And how many people are your co-collaborators that help you with this project?
I mean, that's varied over the years. Like, I mean, I think there's been probably about 30 people who've been to Zakistan. But it kind of depends on, you know, some of my homies are available and want to go out to the desert and scope it out for, you know, a couple days during the summer, and then try and put together a documentary and a little short piece. So that expanded the Zakistan thing and kind of advanced our thing as well, which is cool.
Oh, so is the documentary available to be seen online right now?
Yeah, it's on my site.
Oh, okay, great. So for those people who have gone and visited, and I know that there's been some media and stuff that have gone there, do you have a lot of people that are trying to find out how to get there and that want to go there, or how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of people who kind of just want to go, and so the answer is kind of like no. I'm not, it's not a super secret, but it's like someone goes out there and is totally unprepared, and gets like hurt or bit by a rattlesnake or something or lost. And because, yeah, it's a desert, it could be, things can get really bad really quick out there. So I want to just sort of make sure I have some control and, because I have a responsibility if people are like getting lost or hurt trying to find my thing,
Yeah, I understand. So it's you're kind of trying to look out for people's best interest that may be sort of thinking that, they just, oh yeah, it'll be this fun camping trip and we'll go out and screw around and then something bad could happen.
I mean, it's like I popped two tires on my truck going out there just on the dirt road this summer, because that could have been really bad if I hadn't gone with somebody else, So it is more remote than people think. So yeah, again, it's not like top secret, but if somebody was like, if you were like, hey man, I have, a Ford Expedition and I worked as a, mountain guide for this many years and like I know what's up in the desert, we could, if I'm gonna let people go there, I would want to like know more.
Hey Zach, how you doing?
Hey, all right.
Are you is it a good time now?
Yeah, this is fine.
Cool. All right, well I was just actually emailing with is it Mike? Is that the guy's name? That's your
Yeah.
yeah, he sent me some good the press release and some of the other info.
Yeah, Mike was a great interview. He's also like, has a lot of Utah pride.
Is he a native of Utah?
Yeah.
There's definitely a lot of cool
Yeah,
creative things going on.
it's weird. I mean, Mike Abu puts it, there's no one in Utah who hasn't chosen to be there. Like the people who were done with it left, and so like the people who are there are like real dedicated of like, wait, no. This is what I want it to be like.
Yeah, and there's many conflicts that stem from that, I think.
Yeah. It's weird. The longer I've sort of kind of been, like I don't live there. I just have spent probably more time than most people there. But yeah, the more I see of that whole state, the weirder it gets, I think, where the reality of it appears, I think.
How often do you make it to Utah, and how many times have you been here?
So I mean, almost once a year for the past 10 years. I've skipped a couple of years, but then I've traveled all around the Southwest when I was a kid and growing up and in college. So,
And what's your background with where you grew up and where you went to college and all that stuff?
from Los Angeles originally. I grew up on the West Side near the beach, and I went to school at NYU, and I moved to New York City when I was 18. And I've been there for pretty much the past 12 years.
Cool. And what'd you study at NYU?
Studio art. So
Okay,
I
yeah.
started doing sculpture in college, and the third dimension really, opened things up for me.
Well, so that's interesting. There's not that many people that, or are there? You would know better than me. Are there a lot of people that move from LA to New York and then stay there?
Fewer and fewer, I feel like. There were a lot of classmates of mine and people that I knew who moved to New York, and it seems like a lot of them have moved back. I mean, yeah, I feel like there's a lot of people in New York City who are like the coolest dude in Omaha, Nebraska, and then but they can't, they're not going to go back to Nebraska, so they're in New York City. But I think, LA is not quite that. you know, it's a big, you know, huge urban city and has a lot going for it. So, but I mean, there's something about the intensity of New York City and sort of the kind of insane ambition that most people have here, and the kind of perpetual hustle, which has really shaped my thinking and like my artwork and sort of my approach. Being around really ambitious people, I think, has sort of shaped the Zakistan thing, you know, of being around people who are like have projects and are like doing them and really dedicated. Because New York City is too expensive to just like hang. So very few people are just hanging. They're like driving at something. And for me, that's helpful.
Yeah, definitely. So what are your ambitions with the Zakistan project?
I mean, you know, the end goal is to make it a real country, you know, to be legitimately recognized by other states. That's a long shot. That's not going to happen anytime soon. But the conceptual framework and the all kind of revolves around that. So things like making it possible, like, you know, making it livable or making it so people could stay there longer. I mean, that's a medium-term goal. I mean, right now I don't have the funds or the kind of energy or the time to really devote to it all the time. So, I mean, step by step, I tell people I'm building a, you know, like I'm not building an art project, I'm building a country, I'm just building the monuments first. Yeah, realistically, I mean, I think it continuing to inhabit this weird in-between space between real and unreal and legitimate and illegitimate, you know, the kind of arty elements. I think pushing that, having that interact, you know, when Zakistan passports start circulate, you know, when they circulate into the world and they get used as IDs at bars and no one questions them, like that sort of Zakistan brushing it up against more legitimate things. I mean, yeah, that's sort of the long goal, but the short goal is to kind of like keep building stuff out there and kind of keep the energy and the interest.
And you have a bunch of different citizens from all around the whole world, and do you know how they found out about it and what their interests are?
So I had an embassy, you know, I did this embassy project in Argentina, so there's a lot of Argentine Zakistanis who sort of came to the event. A lot of them are sort of friends of mine from New York, but also kind of across the country. And then there's, you know, some German Zakistanis and Dutch Zakistanis who are kind of buddies of mine and, you know, did me right when I was traveling out there. I lived in India for a bit during college and sort of traveled back. So there's Indian Zakistanis and Tibetan exile Zakistanis. And then there's a lot of people applying for citizenship and interested in the project in the past kind of couple of weeks since it blew up. And so a lot of interest from Pakistan and a lot of Pakistanis who want to be part of this thing, although I'm not sure a lot of them realize how, like, what the extent or, you know, like the reality of the project. I think the facade of a real country and an official film, you know, maybe I built it a little too well, and they want passports and they want to immigrate to Zakistan. So that's been kind of a weird element of it.
Yeah, so that's not possible at this point, right? For people to actually go and live there.
No, I mean, I don't know if that will ever be possible, or probably not in my lifetime. There's like a kind of disturbing and ridiculous power in a website that looks like a crappy government, you know, designed website, and pass, you know, like good, crisp looking passport.
Yeah, it's funny that it's people from Pakistan that are interested in it, because if there are any people who probably could figure it out, I would guess that that might be who it is, people coming from Pakistan who are fleeing. They could probably be the ones that would figure out how to live there and survive.
I suppose. I mean, it's not So from what I understand, I mean, yeah, things in Pakistan are not good right now, politically, economically, you know, even just the security situation, and like domestic terrorism is pretty bad in certain places. So a lot of them are contacting me from like Malaysia or Saudi Arabia or Emirates where they're living, and that's not really like a good situation either. You know, it's fine, but they're not, you know, they're looking for the next thing. So, I mean, from what I understand, like, my Pakistani friend was telling me that, like, his cousin's sister got citizenship to, like, Nauru or some South Pacific island, like, where the bar is very low for citizenship. So she got that and then got a residency permit from another country using that passport and then got, you know, citizenship to someplace else. So the idea is not that crazy for them to look at and think that Pakistan is a legit enough thing that they might be able to parlay it into you know, somewhere where they would rather be. But I'm not totally sure that that's what they're thinking, but also it's I think a sad, kind of just sad state of affairs for the world that, like, my, you know, my, like, art project of a country, or, you know, my, like, goofy project is, you know, that passport, it might, you know, like, in their eyes is, like, or the Pakistan passport is, like, as worthless as a Pakistan one, maybe, you know, because there are very few places you can travel easily on a Pakistan passport.
Oh, okay, yeah, right. Yeah, that makes sense. So I'm curious, what is it that you do in New York to be able to support yourself?
I do a smattering of things. So, you know, big sculpture is what I do, and doesn't quite pay the bills, but I've been able to sort of break even on big projects. I handle art. I build sets. And I kind of do some other jobs where I think, like, creative ideas meet physical reality. Usually that's kind of where I operate.
Right on. That's cool. And you, yeah, I mean, it's just, I just can't believe how you're able to come back and forth and then, you know, live in New York and still do what you're, you know, what you want to do. I think that's really admirable, and you must be working really hard to make that happen.
Yeah, I'm a little tired right now. I'm feeling a little worn down, but I mean, yeah, it has been over the course of 10 years. It hasn't quite been all at once, but I mean, I think, you know, there's kind of a lot of things going on in Pakistan, but I think there's a symbolic power, and maybe even a hope situation, or of, like, this idea of, like, one guy trying to build a country just chipping away bit by bit, you know? I think I have a soft spot in my heart for people who are taking on, like, absurdly ambitious or, you know, impossible goals. So, you know, I think, it's, you know, in everybody in some sense is, like, striving or trying to attain something. So, yeah. Like, even if I'm just projecting the outward, you know, like, even if I'm successful in just projecting, like, the appearance that it's that it's successful, that it's happening, I feel like that has some value.
Yeah, definitely. Recently, things have gotten really crazy, you said, right? What is it that led to this sudden explosion? Is it just the Vice article came out, or what was it that triggered that?
There was a news crew, local news guy, Alex Cabrero. He's with KSL News, and he cold called me last summer and wanted to do a piece on Pakistan. So, I mean, I like to think of myself as a man of the people in, like, 10 o'clock news. I'll do that, yeah. And he was really excited and just real interested in it, and I kind of talked with him about what, you know, what kind of, you know, there's a lot of subtlety, and there's, it sounds silly, and if it's presented in the wrong way, like in the kind of like look at this fucking guy type story, I'm not interested in that. But he was into the idea, and he came out with a camera guy, and they took some great footage and cut together this thing that was kind of like, here's what Zach says it is, here's what it actually is, here's what it's trying to be, and here's kind of how it's successful and how it's not. And I think it was a really good piece, and the transcript of that, or the transcript of the voiceover, got posted on the website, and the Daily Mail picked it up, which is a just huge British tabloid, and they put it up, and then it went all over the world, and then the AP got a hold of it, and it went all over the AP, and so there's been sort of another, you know, kind of, that was like two giant successive waves of publicity, and so now there's some interest, you know, from here and there, although I think the big wave has crashed. But I can't really explain it. I've been doing this for 10 years, and I really, you know, this is the first year that I kind of really started telling people in Utah about it, inviting people to kind of come out here and really, really do it. It's been more of a family affair for, you know, the previous trips and the previous years. But I can't explain how it's sustained as a story or what have you. I mean, I do think there is something that's going on right now that Pakistan touches on this particular moment of this idea of the nation state as we grew up with it, as an entry in the encyclopedia with a flag and then the shape of the country and then a list of facts and things like that's what we know as the nation state as. And the reality of it now is a little slippery. It's a little different, you know, like Iraq has a flag and the shape of a country and all this stuff. But if you look effectively what's happening there in, you know, like eastern Syria and northern Iraq, like ISIS controls, you know, big swashes of that, and who is in charge and what they control and how that operates is quite different from the nation state as we know it. So, you know, I think the situation in Ukraine, even with like the Euro crisis of like, the questions that are being asked are like, well, what effect do German banks have on Greek national sovereignty? Like, those are like real weird, serious questions that I think are now in people's consciousness. And, you know, Zagasan sort of talks, and, you know, even more recently, the refugee thing, all these people fleeing, and like, they don't want to be in Syria and they have to go somewhere, but what does it mean if they get let into Germany or not let into Hungary? Like, I think it's issues on people's minds, and so even just a symbolic kind of representation of this new nation state or sort of something that exists in there, I think holds people's interest, or, you know, something like that.
Definitely. So are you actively recruiting people to become involved in the project or to donate money to the project or anything? Or is it just kind of, are you seeing how it goes and you kind of play it by ear?
I'm more seeing how it goes. I mean, there are sort of directions I'd like it to go and the kind of parts of the world that I'm interested in. But, I mean, right now I'm kind of in reaction mode to everything, you know, so 300 emails that are in my inbox and such. This is what I want to do. You know, talking about Pakistan is something that I'd love to do, you know, that, like, I'm just psyched people are interested, you know.
Yeah. So of the other 299 emails that you have, do you have an idea of what those are, or?
A lot of them are inquiries of people from Pakistan. There's a lot of, I mean, honestly, kind of confused Pakistanis who I think think Pakistan is more legitimate than it is. Some of them are just delightful, crazy people who, you know, send me cocktail napkin drawings of their Cloud City plan, and it's a stadium for like a billion people. And I mean, I think a lot of people just have, you know, I've got plans for arranging the Zakistan emergency districts or something, you know, like there's I feel like there's a wide range and a wide smattering of people from around the world supportive of the thing or want to tell me their crazy project or, it seems like are kind of reaching out to something that they think seems official. It's a little overwhelming and a little bizarre. But we're having, you know, some buddies of mine who are helping me out on that. We're talking about trying to kind of publish all of them to see just, like, who is interested in Zakistan at this moment. It's a kind of fascinating cross-section of humanity.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, I mean, that's amazing. Yeah, I mean, because it's the way I found out about it is on Hyperallergic, the art blog. So to me, I guess my approach was, oh, yeah, it's more of, I have that interpretation of it being more of a creative thing and less of a political thing. Whereas I don't know where the people who are contacting you that think that they can really, you know, it could be really seriously useful to them in their lives and trying to get out of Pakistan. But I mean, that is really fascinating. I didn't expect anything like that to be happening with it.
Yeah, I mean, me neither. Like, well, I mean, not crazy because, like, I put a lot of effort into, like, making things look official and legit and what have you. The whole thing is indeed completely bizarre and, basically, the way the news cycle works is that the KSL guys did this real nice, nuanced piece, and then the transcript got chopped up and then spread around. And so once it gets translated into other languages, or even once the AP gets a hold of it, by the end of the AP cycle, there were people who were misspelling Zakistan and throwing pictures of, like, it looked like Zion or Capitol Reef on it, you know? So it was, like, red rocks and a waterfall and stuff. And my buddies were like, yo, I wish there was a waterfall out there. Like, what are they, you know? So things like, oh, you know, like, quote, robotic sentinels guard, quote, robotic nation or sovereign nation in the middle of Utah. That turns into, like, robotic sentinels guard sovereign nation in the middle of Utah, you know? That helped, like, buttress this facade of legitimacy for Zakistan, and it was good for, I think, Zakistan as a whole, but kind of soul-crushing for humanity that, like, these are the people who are providing news, and, like, I mean, they're copying the AP story, they're not doing any original reporting, like, how do they misspell things, right? You know, you just hit, like, Apple C and then put it in, so that whole thing that happened was kind of bizarre and fascinating and weird, for sure.
Yeah, that's a shame. That doesn't surprise me at all, though. Yeah.
I mean, in some ways, it kind of helped. And, I mean, this is what I'm, you know, like, that it sort of proves my point. The whole idea of Zakistan is like, okay, look close, you know, don't take things at face value. Look a little closer, you know, scratch the surface. Just as a guy in a suit says something into a microphone doesn't make it not crazy, you know? And it seems like the media did not do that. They just sort of served it up unquestioningly. And so, I mean, some people got it and they thought it was funny. And then some people didn't quite get it. It's weird. So I have this sort of a seat to watch the whole thing unfold, and it has been bizarre.
It reminds me of when people are not familiar with satirical news like The Onion or something, and they read the Onion headline, and they get furious, and then it's like, no, don't worry, man, it's just a joke. And but it's like their emotion has already been triggered, and
Yeah.
it's really bizarre. Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's a similar kind of a thing where, how do you know when it's a joke or not? Because there's so much stuff that's unbelievable that happens, and that's you really are creating this dialogue and this provoking this thought about serious issues with this sort of a comedic approach, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean the giant squid and the robots and all that stuff, like, it's ridiculous. I'm not trying to, like, it is totally ridiculous, and I'm trying to, like, put a serious veneer over it, like a veneer of seriousness. I guess, yeah, so I guess the way I explain it is that when I do an empathy project or when I meet people face to face or I give talks, I mean, sometimes people are fooled at, like, the historical displays and the, like, little pieces of bone and dirt that I have on display. But I'm usually there, someone's there to be like, oh, wait, here is the deal. Here's how it's working. A little peek behind the facade or to see how the theater set works, But with the media explosion, I wasn't really able to do that at all. It just, the facade just got presented, and no, and people couldn't see behind it. And that was, like, kind of weird for me.
Yeah, and of course you weren't expecting that, right? I mean, of course not.
I mean, yeah, not really. I mean, the girl from, or Claire from Hyperallergic is the only one who asked, like, wait, is all that stuff still out there? And I was like, no, I just put pictures on my website of when I finish a project. So people have in their minds this eternal Zakistan, this Zakistan that doesn't wilt or fade. Even though the reality of it is, like, a lot of that stuff is really severely weathered out there, Some of it doesn't exist anymore or what have you.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't realize that. So if someone, crashed their plane out there where you were taking those pictures, they wouldn't find some of the things that that are presented on the website, like the booth or the sculptures and all that stuff.
Or, like, the Victory Arch fell down a couple of years ago, so that doesn't effectively exist anymore. The new monument is still there, and I think that'll be there for a while, but some of the things, lasted several years. Some of them were kind of impermanent.
I see. And how do you choose what goes out there? Do you have people that submit artwork to be put on display out there, or how does that work?
I mean, a little bit, like, usually I organize a trip and have some friends come out, and then some of my friends come up with, like, hey, I want to do a project out there. So I'm all, I'm all for it. So yeah, a buddy of mine, Tom Robinson, set up this, like, giant sail in the middle of the desert. So when you watch far away, it looked like there was just a sailboat out in the middle of the desert. But yeah, I'm real into other people taking the same set of parameters that I took originally of, like, okay, here is a stretch, patch of desert. Very few of any, if anyone ever, will stumble across it. Like, what do you do with it? And so I think it's kind of fascinating to see how different people take that initial concept.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna try to keep in touch with you, man, because I would like to do a project out there. I think that'd be great. I mean,
Yeah, totally, man. I'm definitely, yeah, just let me know what you want to do. I mean, I can let you know as things develop, like when I might be in Utah. And, doesn't seem that, I mean, it is like a, just in, like, desolate, inhospitable place, but yeah, totally, man. If you can make it and can get it out there, let's do it.
Yeah. And there's this great program that goes on here at Utah State. It's called Art System, that my advisor, who's a great artist, his name is Mark Lee Coven. He put together this. It's a residency program, essentially. It happens every other year. The first one was last year, and it's artists who are working in some type of crossover with science, technology, engineering, or math. And he brings a lot of artists from all over the place, to
for that, for the residency to have, they have a symposium and they have an exhibition at the museum here and stuff like that. That might be a cool opportunity for you, and I'll definitely tell him about it. The next one's going to be going on in, not 2016, but 2017. Yeah, 2017. And, it seems like there would be some, there may be some, interest, for your project and for what you're doing, for that residency, or at least to let those people know about it, because they would be interested. You know, all the people that come in for the residency, they all want to go to the Spiral Jetty specifically, and you know, they want to see what's going on with the Utah land art and everything that's happening with Utah. It might be worthwhile to have some type of a connection between Zakistan and the art system residency.
Yeah, totally, man. What's the program called again?
It's called Art System. So it's
Art System.
Yeah,
cool.
It's art and then SYSTEM, because STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. So it's cool. Essentially a lot of artists who are also scientists or who are working with scientific methodology. A lot of them do data collection. Some of them are actually biologists. That's why I'm actually here. Are you familiar with, there was a couple of people from New York. Are you familiar with an artist named, Brandon Ballingy?
No.
He's kind of gotten some, he's in a couple of contemporary books and stuff. But he's a biologist and he's an artist and he does a lot of work with like, species that are, that get impacted by the oil spill and stuff like this. Like the piece that they had at the museum here, he had collected shrimp from the Gulf of Mexico that were growing extra limbs after the cleanup of the BP oil spill. And so he makes these really beautiful photos and shows the actual specimen. So he makes, you know, it's like essentially he's making, doing scientific research, but he's also making art out of that scientific research. It's very cool.
Cool.
Yeah. But yeah, I can forward you that info. Yeah.
I definitely like. I am not like down with the white wall cube, you know. Like the I don't like the clean lines between this is art, this is science, this is, you know, a joke. This is, I think all of my work attempts to like insert things into like the real world or what have you.
Yeah, I think that's great. I mean, me too, you know, and I would expect that from the nature of this project. And a lot of people still, I mean, you know, there, of course, in New York, it's easier for you with people because it's not that crazy of an idea in New York. In Utah, this is still a thing that people are very confused about. When I explain to people the type of art that I do, they are just like, well, what the hell, you know, well, how do you sell that? And how do you hang that on a wall? It's like, well, it's not what all art is. Some art can be experiential. And that's still a very foreign thing to the average person.
Yeah.
But I guess that's what makes it more interesting, too. I mean, I don't even care if my projects are viewed as art projects anymore. I don't even care about that. It's more about, like, am I making something interesting? Am I making something that's provocative, that's creating a conversation, that's creating experience? I don't really care about,
absolutely.
Yeah, you know, I care about that a lot more than showing, you know, how talented I am and that I can paint a representative human or something. I used to think that was great. Now I've done enough of that, so I want to move past that.
Yeah.
It sounds like that's kind of, you know, you're kind of in the same mindset too, where that's art can be a lot
absolutely,
more than just just showing an object and creating an object. And that's actually why I think it's funny, you know, are you talking about, you know, how do you commodify the project to make it kind of sustainable in a way? And I think it's great that you know, that you're being patient about that and that you're, that's not the biggest concern, you know, because a lot of artists would, after they have the exposure that you've had, they would say, okay, well now I'm going to, you know, sell the passports for $1,000 and now they're this fine art piece and it's this prestigious thing, which then completely changes the whole project.
Yeah. I mean, the Dagestan merch and even the passports, I just, you know, make an attempt to price it to move, to make it affordable and try and get as many pieces and things out there.
How many citizens are there at present?
There's between 300 and 400.
Cool. And do you have data on where their native countries are?
I'm working on that. My record keeping in the early years was not as diligent as I would have wished, but it's a lot.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I think once this dies down, but I mean, in terms of languages and different countries the passport holders come from, and I think it's in the dozens.
That's great.
Or yeah, the story's been covered in like at least 40 different countries. I mean, just in the past couple of weeks, 40 different countries, and I think like 30 different languages or something.
Yeah, remarkable.
Yeah, which is kind of wild.
Yeah. Have you ever considered doing one of those crowdfunding things, like a Kickstarter or something, to raise money for the project, just even to get you to be able to go back and forth or something like that?
Yeah, although those things, I mean, you know, that's a longer discussion. I've done that before, and I think it works best with the, like, in my case, I'm going to build this giant thing. Help me build this giant thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll give you a piece of it or a, like, memento of it. So, I mean, and this year was kind of the first year in a while that I had gotten kind of my shit together to kind of propose and organize and really put together like a solid project. Other things have been a little more kind of like run and gun, fly by the seat of my pants type things. I mean, sustainable, yeah, that's the tricky word. Like, I don't know. I think everybody's trying to figure that out, right?
Yeah, I mean, well,
somewhere or another.
Yeah, just simply the fact that just going from New York to here once a year, that's expensive. Just doing that, period. And then, you know, not to mention, so you fly into Salt Lake City, then you're still a couple hours away from the actual spot. I mean, this is just that alone, that's very expensive. And
Yeah. You know, I mean, you know, in Dagestan, everything is very straightforward, you know, like, okay, like, thirsty, drink some water, you know, like, you know, we're going to build this thing. We have the tools that are right in front of us, and we can't go get more stuff, you know. Or the nearest hardware store is, like, you know, 150 miles away. So how are we going to solve this problem? It's always that. And it's just sometimes there's a lot of steps to just get, you know, to get the screws out to Dagestan. There's a ton of steps before that. And it's just like, take each thing as it comes. Of like, all right, well, I have $250. What is the biggest thing I can make for $250? You know, like, that's kind of how it started.
Yeah, that's cool. It reminds me of, I've read about Smithson and how he came out and did the Spiral Jetty, and you know, it sounds like it's kind of a similar process to what you went through, where it's like, okay, this is where it's affordable to buy a piece of land, and I can go out here and do this, and there's certain limitations, but this is a good spot for it. And I mean, it's a completely different project, of course, but there's a lot of similarities, and I think that your project really does fit with the other land art projects that are already in Utah. And I think it's very cool that you have a contemporary take on land art, and it's involving this like completely changing, constantly evolving space, whereas Smithson's Spiral Jetty is, you know, probably going to be there for as long as humans are there. And like Nancy Holt's sun tunnels.
Different. The same question is posed of, like, what do you do with this crazy alien landscape wasteland, you know? So, yeah, the question posed is the same as that. You know, I think the way I answer that, or the way you would answer that, is different the way from Smithson does. But I think the landscape itself really really does have an effect on people and things.